Hi, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Lab Talks. My name is Ben Putley. I am the CEO and co-founder of Alchemy. It's my pleasure today to be joined by John. John, if you wouldn't mind introducing yourself, what you do, where you come from, all those good things.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks very much for having me. So my name's John Helm. I'm a global digital director at Essence MediaCom. Specifically, I know digital covers all manner of kind of sins. So specifically, I focus on biddable strategy.
Okay.
And really what that looks at is a combination of things is how are we approaching biddable media, how are we set up to do that from a team perspective and an activation perspective and making sure that we've got the best practice in place, but also that we're pushing kind of the boundaries of what we're trying to do from it.
Cool. I want to just take one step back, and it'd be awesome if you could, like, because some people that listen to this may not understand what biddable media is, so if you could like give a brief explanation of that, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think biddable probably is slightly defined by different people,
yeah,
slightly differently.
Okay.
So for us on Mars specifically is we're looking at it primarily from a programmatic paid social and paid search perspective.
Got you. Okay.
And so really from that frame, looking at those channels, I think programmatic can become a bit of an all encompassing term as well. So historically that was very much how are we activating online video. How are we looking at display? How are we looking at audio?
Mm.
So that's changing a bit with the changes in the ecosystem as well. So
yeah,
we're having a look at that definition as it evolves.
It's a bit of a segue, but we've been to a lot of crypto or blockchain events recently. So we just came back from ETHCC in Brussels, which is like a very heady mix of people that love blockchain. And one of the things that I thought was quite interesting in the marketing space, at least, is that you tend to have blockchain companies that sponsor a Formula One team or like work with influencers and not really much in the middle. And I think that's probably where what you do in biddable media sits. So it'd be cool, I guess, to take us through like why it's important for brands, what kind of impact can it have? Like, what are you looking to achieve with biddable media as part of like the overall marketing funnel?
Yeah, absolutely. What we're trying to achieve is move with where audiences' attention is moving.
Yeah, okay.
Really. So I think there was a recognition across Essence MediaCom and also across Mars that audiences were spending and younger audiences were spending more time with different channels than they previously had done. So there was a shift that needed to happen just to make sure we were delivering the same kind of reach, hitting people where they were spending time and able to engage with them in the right way. Mm. And along with that shift from an audience focus perspective and a channel perspective, I think what we've also seen off the back of the kind of shift to biddable media is an improvement in outcomes as well.
Yeah.
So again, maybe going back to that definition of biddable media, what we're also talking about is a transparent buying approach as well. So from a buy side, making sure that we have a full understanding of how much we're spending, where we're spending it, and why we're spending on those things. So
all important.
Yeah. That combination of shift in audience focus and then also a shift to a transparent model, as it were. We've seen some significant outcomes as a result of that.
I think it's like it's an underappreciated kind of part of the funnel, right? Because it kind of gives you the opportunity to find people when they're about to buy something. If they're not about to buy something, like give you the chance to change their opinion about a particular product or educate them on a particular product. And I think that, yeah, people often get exposed to a lot of ads online, but don't necessarily understand the impact of it. And I've got a stupid metaphor, but like people don't think advertising works until they lose their cat and then they put a poster on a letterbox or a lamppost and like, oh shit, it works. So yeah, I think it's at least...
I love that analogy. I'm definitely going to steal that.
Yeah, it's a good one, right? I stole it as well. It's not mine. I can't take any credit. But yeah, I think it's as the... I'm coming to this quite a blockchain angle just because there's a lot of the conversations I've been having recently and there's more and more, I guess you'd call it like Web3 ad tech companies, which I'd consider Alchemy, but like some others that we've spoken to, like people like Cookie3, there's businesses coming in like Safari, which are like looking at analytics for Web3. And I think it's having kind of gone through that in my Web2 career, as it were, seeing that now start to bubble up in Web3, I think is really exciting because it shows that the space is growing up quite a lot. And the cool part is like some of the strategies are interoperable with each other. You know, like you can take what you've learned about biddable media and apply that to blockchain brands, but equally like the new ways in which you can track spend or attribute campaigns with Web3 wallets is what I'm thinking of here is like a really nice and interesting space to be in. Which leads me on to like supply path optimization, right? That is an important topic. People talk about it a lot. There were some really interesting studies from ISBA and ANA, like highlighting the challenges. So it'd be cool to hear how Mars and Essence MediaCom think about supply path optimization, the value of it, and what's that really mean to you?
As I mentioned, I think that that shift to transparency and biddable media has done a huge amount to drive, you know, a full knowledge of where cost is going on the buy side.
Yeah.
I think that was a really important thing for us to do, and we've seen the output and the performance off the back of it. But I think where we're really shifting next is that focus on supply and what is really understanding the route from when we set that bid, we set that campaign up in a buy platform to the publisher.
Yeah.
What's that chain? And once we understand that, how do we drive that to be more efficient?
Yeah.
How do we reduce cost where it's necessary, but also how do we simplify that and ultimately hopefully create a better ecosystem for publishers so that more money is ending up in their pockets at the end of the day. So I think there are three chunks as to how we're approaching SPO at the moment. First is that reduction of complexity.
Yep.
So, you know, we have work with a number of the big major DSPs. They come with all of the boxes ticked from a supply perspective.
Yeah.
Which is great, gives you loads of scale, but realistically, there's probably a handful of those that are driving the most amount of scale, have different capability, and are driving some level of efficiency or
performance. Yes.
So really, the first step for us was how do we reduce down from the 20, 30, 40 SSPs that we were originally working with, down to a handful, actually. Can we focus down 5 to 8?
Yeah.
And then, yes, if there's a real opportunity to include a new partner, there's a new inventory source, there's something that we're missing out on, let's plug that in. Let's not lose that opportunity, but let's be sensible about when we do that. The next bit, very much leaning into that ISBA analysis and work that they've done over the last couple of years, is once we've done that reduction, are there ways that we can lean into the relationship with those SSPs to say, let's have a much more transparent relationship about how much money is going out in that system, what's being taken where, and can we get a bit more of a pass back through of what that cost looks like and where it's going. So really provide getting that transparency from the partners and then providing that back to our clients so that they understand where it's going in the system. And it's very much not let's completely reduce it down to nothing, because there's tech in the chain, there's stuff that's working for us, let's make sure it's compensated, you know, appropriately in the right way. But let's also make sure that if there are redundancies in that chain, we're trying to reduce that down and a more direct route.
I think it's like it's a really smart way to go. I was having a conversation with someone around the parallels between like programmatic and biddable media versus like other biddable markets, like the big one being like financial markets, derivative markets. And the London Stock Exchange kind of went through this. It went from like quite a high fee marketplace to a lower fee, better data. And then that allowed people that were kind of trying to purchase an asset or get an edge over other people that were purchasing assets, the chance to kind of bring their secret sauce to that data, the way they interpret it, the way they then action those interpretations and insights to then deliver better outcomes for their trading. And I think that it looks like now that programmatic, which has kind of always had this premise of being akin to a financial market, but it's now going down that route as well, where it's like people like Essence MediaCom yourselves can like have a ton of experience, really intelligent people in the business that like can figure out where to buy media for the best outcomes. And then you have publishers which are kind of creating the venue for trading and adding some value there. And it's like you then just let the pipes trade a bit more, which is like, I think, much cooler way to approach it. It makes the market more efficient. It makes capital allocation then and revenue generation more efficient. And then kind of everyone is winning. So
definitely,
it's really cool that it's kind of coming around. And I'd be remiss of me to not add in a blockchain part here, but like that is something that we talk about a lot, is that if you have an immutable record of all the transactions that took place that everyone can view, it kind of gives people the chance to, okay, with a degree of certainty, I know this is going to happen if I do this.
Yep.
And that just must help inform better decisions for buying and targeting audiences to impact the way they think about certain brands.
Definitely, definitely. I think having that record of it, like you say, is, I mean, that's the next step of where we really need to take our SPO approach. I think for Mars is we've done the entry level stuff, maybe, if you will, and we've taken that step and we've done it. We're working to do that at scale, but really starting to drive that full transparency piece, getting the capability to understand where it's going. I think, you know, at the moment, it's very much built on relationships. It's very much built on some more of the pass back, but actually having more control over that, I think.
Yeah. I guess it must be quite a big operational headache as well to go from like 40 to 8 makes a big dent in that. But then you're like, oh, have we limited scale? And that must be like a difficult balance to strike. And how do you kind of go about, if you can share it, how do you go about that process of like determining like what makes a good inventory source good?
Yeah. I think there's a few steps. And one of the things as part of that biddable transformation that we've done for Mars was bring in a series of teams in each region to deliver that biddable media activation and the campaigns. So we have teams set up in London, New York, and with Latin America and APAC as well.
Mm.
Really to help us drive a bit of consistency and also still not lose too much of the local knowledge. So really leaning in and having conversations with them to understand the supply choices they're already making.
Yeah, okay.
So let's not lose that idea of where there might be local inventory sources and relevancy there.
Mm.
But also really huge piece of analysis into what we were buying, where we were buying, the basic performance metrics each of the supply sources were delivering. And then shopping that around the business, really getting opinions from different people at Mars, at different people at Essence MediaCom, and making sure that anything that we put forward as our kind of reduction approach made sense. And like I said just before, it's also for those new channels, for those new opportunities, for any local nuance, any platform nuance as well. Let's make sure we're not just cutting something off for the sake of cutting it off, but actually providing that opportunity that if something crops up, we can add that into our supply approach.
Yeah.
Let's be sensible.
What new channels are you excited about? Is there any that have kind of popped up? I think of a few, but it'd be great to hear from you. Yeah.
I mean, I'll probably fit every supply buzzword into this.
Nice. But, I've got my Yahtzee card here, so I'll let you know.
So, I mean, the few that we're really focusing on a lot more is what's our opportunity from an addressable TV or SVOD or whatever we want to call it perspective. So, big screen TV, programmatic advertising.
Yeah.
I think, you know, we all see the rise of Netflix, Disney Plus coming out with an ad-supported model, Amazon Prime, again, they're exciting opportunities, they're big brands, they're big opportunities for us to get in front of people in a great environment, great context. So I think that's one area, but importantly, we need to approach that with some sense of how that interplays with the rest of our TV mix.
That's
not necessarily going away. People still watch TV at the end of the day. Some of the viewing habits are changing, but let's be sensible about how that approaches. And then outside of that, I definitely think programmatic out of home. So again, different by market, different capabilities, different access to different formats. Let's again be sensible about what we can do, but also look to test and see how it bolts onto maybe kind of more traditional paper and paste out of home advertising. So.
And it's not that familiar. I've obviously been exposed to it. I go to Piccadilly Circus, you know. What are the benefits of programmatic out of home versus like traditional out of home? Like, is there more reporting? Can you customize it better? Like, what is really like making you excited about that?
I'm a bit of a programmatic nerd. So I grew up as a trader and that's kind of my background. So part of the excitement for me is just being able to do it.
Yeah. Like, okay, it's a new channel.
That's for me a bit of the excitement. I think the serious stuff outside of that is, you know, being a little bit more targeted. Are we looking at campaigns that have got specific requirements? So is it specific times of day? Is it, you know, understanding geo audience and applying that to how we're selecting different placements. Is it changing the creative and the approach that we're doing a bit more nimbly than we would be otherwise for more traditional out of home? So I think those are some of the things that we see are a real opportunity from us from a programmatic out of home perspective and beyond just we can do it, let's do it. And like I say, we need to balance what the need for Mars is, what the need for each of our campaigns is, alongside more traditional out of home.
It's a company called Surreal. So they do like this new protein cereal, right? It's like, I've had some of that in the past. It's rank. This stuff's pretty good. Like, I'm not use my code at checkout. No, I'm not. But they've been doing some really great outdoor ads. Like I'll send you a link afterwards because it's like very tongue in cheek. Like they've just like marketed it to marketers and they're like, this ad is demonstrating ROI. And it's just a weird outdoor ad. But like I've kind of been looking at how they've been expanding on like LinkedIn. They've got like 100,000 followers on LinkedIn as like a cereal company. I'm like, it's kind of nuts. Like, it's cool that you've been able to do that. And then they've just managed to do a partnership with Gymshark. They kind of got into that collab space, and it's like cool that that brand is going quite well. It's delicious. But
I think that nimbleness is the thing really for them, isn't it?
Because I guess I would say I'm a bit of like a skeptic of outdoor, because it's like a very unattributable ad format compared to, I guess it's maybe just annoyed that we, as someone that's been in programmatic advertising, they're like, your click-through rate's not too low. I'm like, but what about outdoor? Any clicks? But it is impactful, right? Like, it has like shared on other platforms. And I remember there was a British Airways ad, or maybe it was Emirates, that there was a baby pointing at planes, and it was like, that is the BA da 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 from San Francisco to Heathrow. And I'm like, that is a really cool way of using outdoor. And I think to your point about being excited to do it, it must be quite cool to have to press a button and you're like, that is going to show an ad at Piccadilly Circus. Yeah. That's kind of nuts, actually. So yeah,
absolutely. And I mean, the measurement point's a really interesting one, right? Like, I think just because the measurement and the attribution is difficult doesn't mean that we shouldn't go for the channel.
Totally, so yeah.
I think it's more about how do we make sure within our measurement approach we've got a longer term capability to understand the impact that some of these channels have. And you know, things like MMM have become popular again, more widely in the industry. People are talking about that again a lot more, as I think some of the holes in maybe multi-touch attribution have become a bit clearer. So I think really leaning into those types of measurement capabilities and helping to build on them and adapt them over time is super important. Because it's funny that the CTR point is something that we get asked a lot about various different ad formats.
Yeah.
I mean, personally, CTR doesn't mean anything to me. Like, I don't care about it.
It proved that it existed, right? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So actually, we've probably also been looking at the wrong signals anyway for a while in digital advertising, programmatic advertising as it is. So,
And your point around supply path optimization, it's like, even if you can measure it, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's an accurate representation of what happened, right? It's like you can impact people's decisions about purchasing without them clicking on an ad. You know, it's like, little and often at the right time is really the best time for advertising. It doesn't work. It's brilliant drinking the Kool-Aid. But so yeah, I think to kind of bring it back to the supply path optimization side of things, let's assume that your supply path is optimized. What would you expect to see in that instance in terms of like just overall impact on brand strategies?
I think there's a couple of bits. And I guess initially, one of the things I might say is I actually don't necessarily want to see too much impact at all. Is the point of it is we're still delivering a similar level of performance straight away. You know, we're still hopefully delivering the same cost efficiency, if not better.
Yeah.
I think the next step and the next thing for me is really, how do we lean into those fewer supply paths and relationships with those SSPs to then start to do more interesting work on the supply side? Is there an opportunity for us to take some of the audience targeting work that we do within the DSP, make those decisions more on the supply path, and mean that we're buying more of the supply that's getting sent through to the platform? So what are those opportunities there? Similarly, I think also, how do we start to step beyond, you know, even when you've reduced down from an SSP perspective, I still think there's work to be done on, are we delivering a direct supply path? Are we looking at reseller relationship and so on and so forth? So again, leaning more into that direct approach as well, there's still more that we can do from that point of view. So yeah, I think initially, once the supply path has been optimized, as it were, very much I don't necessarily want to see a huge change. I want it to be, we've driven that reduction and, you know, we haven't seen a negative impact, as it were.
Okay,
that makes maybe sense. That's my nervousness.
I get what you're saying. It's like, you want to be delivering the same effectively. And I think that's, that makes sense, to be honest with you.
But I think there is that cost efficiency point as well. You know, realistically, by having a more direct relationship with our partners and reducing down, we should be focusing in on inventory that is having a better outcome for us.
Yeah.
And ultimately, therefore, delivering that efficiency out the back of it.
Yeah. Like, you get more bang for your buck, right? And then it's like, okay, then maybe that then, if you can deliver what you were delivering with, let's say, you're spending 10% less because the performance is 10% better, you then have like 10% for like innovation, as it were, like testing out programmatic out of home, as you say, just like some of the new stuff that is going to drive performance for the brands that you work with tomorrow and then the week after that.
Yep.
And just, really
I guess, demonstrate your expertise in what it is that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of started to look towards the future with an optimized supply path. What else makes you excited in Biddable Media? Like, what are we like, yeah, let's do it today, you know?
I think some of the other areas that are exciting at the moment, again, get your kind of buzzword bingo card at the ready, is how are we using automation, AI, machine learning to improve what we're doing?
Yeah.
And I think there's a couple of areas we're looking at this for Mars specifically, is how are we working from an algorithm perspective and making decisions and optimizations within the platforms? Yeah. And is there an opportunity to hack, as it were, some of the algorithms that platforms are putting out and still drive a better performance? So, you know, Google, Meta producing platform capabilities that use their own AI, you know, Performance Max, Advantage Plus, things like that. I worry the black box nature of that doesn't necessarily give us the real insight to then be able to understand what it's doing, but more importantly, learn off it ourselves. So actually, how do we maybe add in our own AI capability, our custom algorithm capability to drive more of that decisioning ourselves and actually lift the hood on what is that algorithm doing and be able to take action off the back of it and actually drive learnings off the back of it?
Yeah, because I think it's like any one ad campaign could be billions of ad impressions, right? Like, we call it CPMs because the numbers get so big so quickly, but like what that is great for is machine learning, right? Like, you can input tons and tons of information and crunch it in a way that we can't as human beings, sadly, or we could if we had enough time. So I think that is, for me, where there is going to be a ton of advancements in like figuring out the perfect time to send a message to someone. Like, I use a email client called Superhuman. I've used it for quite a long time, and it's got this new feature now which is like, it's called Smart Send. So it, like, you can press it and then it sends your email at a time that's most likely for that person to open it. And I don't understand how that works. And maybe I'm just a sucker for marketing, but the maths in that situation. But I think there's something in that for like timing of messaging on the right channel at the right time. And having that in-house would, again, just kind of allow you to demonstrate expertise to the brands that you work with, which would certainly be very cool. How are you feeling about targeting in the future?
I mean, based upon the latest changes from Google, just being kept on our toes at this point in time.
Yeah.
Look, even with the announcement from Google, I don't think anything necessarily changes. Yeah, I think user behavior is headed the way of reducing the volume of tracking that's out there.
Yeah.
So regardless of what Google said a couple of weeks ago, we still need to lean into a variety of different testing opportunities to understand what is working now and then also what's going to work a year, two, three, four, 5 years down the line for us. Yeah. I mean, it's an area that gives me a little bit of nervousness.
Yeah.
Just because I think within programmatic, within paid social, it's already difficult enough to understand the combination of kind of audience variables that we need to build to be able to find the right person. And that bit around find the right person, find the right time with the right message, it's already difficult enough as it is.
Yeah.
And I think what really we need to have a look to do, and maybe this is another role that, well, it definitely is another role that AI can bring in, is how do we bring the great work that kind of our strategists do from a broad strategy and audience understanding perspective, and how do we translate that and actually into a set of signals that still exist that are persistent so within our buying platforms. And I think that's the bit that's the key focus next for me in that area, is there's still a variety of different opportunities out there. You know, the walled gardens have some great capabilities still.
Exactly.
Let's not write those off. There are other capabilities outside of that we need to lean into and test and understand whether it's delivering outcome for us and whether we're reaching the right people. So yeah, it's a bit of a nerve-wracking area just because it chops and changes quite a bit, but I don't actually think that it's necessarily going to change our direction over the next year or
so. And I think it's just like, it's important just from like a peace of mind standpoint. Do you know what I mean? It's like, if you are an alcohol brand, you want to make sure you're advertising to people that are 25 and over, you know? And like, if you're advertising, like if you're Disney and you're looking to target kids and their parents, you know, like, you've got to do that in the right way. And I think that like cookies are really important to make sure that you are staying on the right side of the regulations, because that can go badly quite quickly.
Definitely.
You know, and I think that maybe that was part of their consideration, is just ensuring that brands and ads were being shown to the right people at the right time to mm-hmm. stop, yeah, doing it when you shouldn't be doing it, frankly. Because there was like, I think this has been a thing with, I don't know if this is accurate or not. I can't remember who told me. One of my friends works in gambling and they're saying that there's a challenge now with at least gambling brands being on football shirts, because like you have to be 18 to go into a bookmaker's, but then you walk into a football stadium and I'm an Arsenal fan, you go in there and it's like, I think it's like, so I can't remember who their book, eToro or something. I mean, there's like loads of ads for adults and then there's a whole section of the stadium for kids. And it's like, maybe you shouldn't do that, you know? But,
Or we're just putting the ads on the side the family stand can't see.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's facing out so they can't see it. But like, I mean, you get a lot of like, I think it's, is it Chelsea that have got like a big new Spurs one? So it's like BetMGM or something like that. So it's like, that is an interesting thing to consider. And I think that that makes programmatic advertising in particular quite a nice place for those kind of brands to go, because definitely. You can do it safely and you can do it to the right people at the right times rather than in a football stadium where perhaps it's a bit of like collateral advertising, if that makes sense.
Definitely. And I'd love to think that Google made the decision so that we could be more responsible about our targeting decision.
Yeah, I'm sure they did. Yeah, like, benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
And then I think one thing that I'll kind of, I guess, like talk you through, and then it'd be good to get your take on it, because it's one thing that we talk about a lot, is there's more and more people adopting blockchain in general. I've got a presentation about this, but like it's like now you've got some of the biggest financial institutions offering exchange traded funds. So the ability for accredited investors in the US to invest in something that is regulated and secure, it's like, hey, that's pretty big, because it was quite a fringe asset for a while, and now you've got like record inflows into these ETFs. So more people are going to start adopting blockchain as a byproduct of that, I think. And you, whenever you are interacting with a site involving the blockchain, you connect your wallet. And the cool thing about a wallet is that everything is on chain, so you can see transactions that took place within a wallet, but they are pretty much anonymized in that you have like an alphanumeric key, very similar to a cookie or a device ID, that then stores some information on chain about, okay, this person swapped one Ethereum for 2,500 USDT and so on and so on. That is actually, in my opinion, like quite an interesting way, like if you kind of put your like retail media hat on, to like get some inferred purchasing decisions and then target ads according to what you can then see from on-chain data. And it's, the cool thing is, it's like there's, I can't remember the exact number, but millions and millions of wallets on chain. So it's like someone like Essence can say, right, okay, we're just going to look at all of the wallets that we can see on chain, and we're going to say, right, a Mars customer might look like this on chain, and then we can look for where those wallets appear and then show them the ads that we want to show you based off of data that we can infer. And it's like, that would be something that then you guys owned, your own IP from something that ultimately is open source, which is like quite cool. It's just a case of, is the scale quite there yet? Probably not. But given that people tend to opt out of cookies, you don't need a huge amount of scale to kind of get parity and scale with cookies. And then you do have like a really interesting way to target ads in the future. And I appreciate that as me trying to drag you down the rabbit hole with me. But yeah, it's...
No, I think that's an interesting route to go down, because particularly from a retail media perspective, I think that's a really defined set of behaviors,
yeah,
and really a true understanding of what people do and when they do it, right? So having that insight and having that knowledge to be able to then target them with ads, like you say, we'll be at a point where it's parable to cookie reach anyway. So really, we probably shouldn't be that concerned about testing it out.
Yeah.
I wonder whether there's an opportunity, particularly as an agency, where we need to probably start evolving the types of roles and people that we're hiring to be able to understand this kind of tech and use it in the right way, and be able to make sure that we're implementing that kind of tactic into our campaigns. Because I do think there's a huge amount of possibility from an analysis point of view that we're not necessarily always tapping into for each of our campaigns, because maybe we don't have quite the right team roles in just yet to be able to react to this kind of thing.
Yeah, so I wonder if those people even exist. Like on-chain segmenters. Because it's like, even if you had one wallet, you know, it's like, hey, we know this person bought a Mars product, let's say. You can then just go and sleuth every other wallet, and it's like, hey, what is comparable? Was there other similar wallets that it interacted with? Like we talk to a lot of crypto exchanges that are looking for user acquisition. And what you can see on chain is like, did wallet A interact with, let's say, Bybit wallet B? And it's then, okay, it's fair to assume at that point that's a customer of Bybit. And it's like, if you're another, let's say Coinbase, and you're looking to do some like conquest advertising, it's like, okay, we want to try and show a message about how great Coinbase is versus Bybit to buy it to wallets that we know have interacted with the Bybit wallet. And I think that, in much the same way when you could do that with cookies when they first became prolific,
yep,
it presents quite a nice opportunity for, again, strategies that people like Essence Mediacom have really honed and know how to do really well with like a slightly new technology and what is like pretty much like open field in terms of the way that people are thinking about marketing in Web3. If I go back to my old point, it's like Man United's kit or some guy that talks about it on Twitter.
Right.
So like there's this whole big gap in the middle. We're talking to some companies around there, like, actually, you know what, we would like to look at brand building and education that sits outside of like Twitter or Reddit, which are popular channels, and then we don't want to sponsor a football team just yet because it's tough to attribute. or the team, their CMO support already has a crypto sponsor, which, right. Yeah. But yeah, it's a really interesting thing.
I think it's that education piece that's needed at the moment from understanding. I can imagine you're seeing a lot of lean in and uptake from the crypto exchanges because they fundamentally understand the product, right? At the end of the day, in the back end. So, you know, that's a load of experts leaning in to test something out and to launch something, because they've already got the education inbuilt into the business that they work in. Whereas I think there's a lot of education needed probably from a broader perspective to be able to scale that out.
Yeah, I think it's like sometimes it can be, there's no like guardrails per se in blockchain. It's like, I think people underestimate that. It's like you create a wallet, you've got some crypto, and then you're just like chucked out into the middle of the ocean.
Right.
And there's like, because it's been around for what, since 2008 now, yeah. And it's like there's some, being a meme, but like some monstrous whales swimming underneath you that have been in the ocean for a long time and know exactly what to do. And like, there's no real take backs in blockchain. It's like if you send something somewhere and you're like, oh, didn't mean to send it there, you're like, good luck. That's your first crypto stripe that you earned. You know, I've got a sleeve full of those, sadly. and I think that that's definitely being changed. Like, I think MasterCard did, like, they've got like username based rather than wallet based crypto addresses, and there's people that are working on like social abstraction, so like if you forget your 12 words normally you're screwed, but like now it's allowing for you to recover it in the way you would if you forgot your Gmail password, you know. So like that, again, just provide some of the guardrails, make it a bit friendlier. And really, regulation is going to help that a lot. Like, you're seeing it in America. You're starting to see it now in the UK. There's an initiative called Stand With Crypto. So it's created by Coinbase, and they are really speaking to regulators and policymakers on the application of blockchain outside of just like the narrow purview of financial markets. And I think that they've identified advertising as one of those. I mean, as the IAB did in 2018, right? But it's nice to see that people are like, okay, you can do cool stuff with the blockchain. Let's just be sensible about creating the guide rails for people to join it, learn about it. And then it's like that then opens up the path for businesses like Essence.
Yeah.
To be like, okay, there's some cool stuff we can do here. How do we start funneling that into the way that we make decisions? And then what people do we need to bring in? What talent do we need to find? And it just like kind of allows you to kind of keep moving forward with the time. So it's
definitely lowers that barrier of entry.
Exactly right. Because there is a big barrier to entry sometimes. It's like, I talked to my dad about it and he's like, what? What do you mean?
Yeah.
Like, okay, yeah. Here's your ledger. And he's like, what do I do with it? There are other wallets available, but yeah. it's going to be a slow burn. But we're getting there. Touch wood. I think it's like conversations like this, you know, where I think you're coming at it from the things that you're doing today, and I'm like, hey, talk about blockchain, you know, but like, I think it does have its applications. I mean, I think we've worked with some of your brands to help them demonstrate the value of using that. And I think it's just our job to keep sharing it with you.
Definitely.
And this is how it performs, this is what we can do with it, and just kind of keep the conversations going. Cause yeah, like you have more expertise in like buying large amounts of media than we do. And like, here's our just like narrow part of it that can like fit into an overall mix. And I think it's like, using supply path optimization, using machine learning, as you said, to like, okay, what part of this can this fit into? Is it, okay, this is great for direct response, or let's try and use this to build more branding? You know, it's like, yeah, I don't envy you. You have a difficult job because there's a lot of different ads you can buy.
Yeah, I know. I think it's also about how do we then bring that learning back to the conversations that we're having elsewhere as well. Like, you know, let's challenge the partners that we have to improve what they're providing, improve the capability, improve the transparency. Because, yeah, like I said at the top, a lot more of this at the moment is about, well, the SBO approach that we're taking is very much how do we lean into the relationships that we have with the supply partners. That's based upon existing functionality, right?
Yeah,
whereas actually, if they're not going to evolve what they're able to do, that, you know, we need to push them on that with the education and the learning that you're bringing, and start to make some decisions around whether the supply that we're reduced down to is the right supply moving forward as well.
So what else are you excited about? I think we've gone, I turn our little blockchain segue and then go back. Because there's like, I was reading about this yesterday, like I forgot that TikTok's still potentially getting banned in America, which is kind of wild. Like, sure, that's been a useful channel for you. Like, do you see that money going elsewhere? Is there like another platform that you're excited about? Like, what else kind of do you see in the future?
On the TikTok point, I think for the moment, it doesn't change how we're approaching that channel, because I think until the dust settles on exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah, there. I agree. Yeah.
And I think, let's be honest, until we get through the US elections later this year and see how that settles down, that'll provide a bit more clarity on the direction we need. And I think the challenge with it as a platform is that, you know, huge growth in user base, huge opportunity to connect with consumers in a different way that other platforms have some capability to do, but not quite in the same way. It doesn't come without its downsides, right? You know, there is a brand safety, a brand suitability challenge with TikTok as a platform, and making sure that we're appearing in the right way with TikTok is something that we look at and something that we try and tackle. So
yeah, I can imagine. Yeah,
yeah, and that provides its own fun.
Yeah, I'm sure,
as it were. So yeah, look, it's been a growing platform for what we do across most clients from what I've seen, and that's for the reason I laid out. I think outside of that, slightly linked in from a brand safety, a brand suitability perspective, I think there's a broader element of how do we start to make more responsible media choices. And, you know, I think that ties into the approach that we want to take from an SPO perspective and the transparency perspective. Mm-hmm. I think that ties into how are we looking at sustainability from our advertising perspective. And how do we give our teams the right tools to understand suitability, responsibility, sustainability, and start to make decisions on that in the right way for brands and for Mars. So I think that's another big area that we're really leaning into and focusing on is providing those tools, providing some guides on how they should be approaching it, and hopefully helping them to make some better decisions in that area.
Yeah, because the sustainability is a big deal, right? It's like, I think everyone knows this, but the stat that digital ads produce more emissions than the aviation industry is kind of nuts.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
Horrifying.
Although I did, you know what? I make this joke quite a lot, but we went out to Bangalore and during the floods, Chandra was supposed to meet us. He got stranded. We got stuck in Dubai, and then they like cancelled all ongoing flights. And we got one of those massive jumbo jets, the double deckers, which are pretty cool. And there was like 25 people on it. And I was like, and we as an industry are still worse than just 25 people flying on a plane from Dubai to Bangalore.
I'm like,
fuck's sake. And I think like measurement is really important. I just think it becomes challenging because like how far out can you measure it? Do you know what I mean? It's like, okay, well, if you really want to go to the nth degree, it's like, well, there's five people that are working on this campaign, and then one of them got the train, and then two of them got the bus, and then one person drove in, and then they did that on Monday and Tuesday, and then Wednesday and Thursday they did something. Do you know what I mean? It can like just become unwieldy very quickly. So I think like,
are we counting how many emails they send back and forth
to
each other?
You know, and it's like, did they write the notes down on a piece of paper, or was it on like, you know, like it all gets quite crazy. And I think that's where for me, like supply path optimization, like a result of that is that media becomes more sustainable because there's fewer people between the buyer and the seller. So there's less of the replicated processes. Like, you might be able to have more effective ad campaigns. You're getting the same performance with less spend, which then means you're just, there's fewer transactions that are being processed. So I think that the supply path optimization is a very pragmatic way to really make an outsized impact on the sustainability without starting to measure like how many bits of toilet roll you use, you know, when you're in the office that day. It's kind of crazy. And it's cool to see platforms that are like now offering the management and measurement of it. Like, we're big fans of the people at Goodloop, you know, like, they've got a really cool solution, but there's like Sidara and Scope 3 that are like an Impact Plus, to try and name all of them, so there's no favoritism. But yeah, it's interesting to see that that is now a big deal.
And I think we, you know, there's a couple of ways we can look at it as well. It's like, from a creative perspective, how are we producing assets and what kind of assets are we producing?
Yeah.
And is there an opportunity to, you know, reduce the weight of those? Mm-hmm. And that has an immediate impact as well. So yeah, Similarly to the SPO side of things, before you even go in, you've already reduced what's eventually going to serve. So
yeah,
there's significant work there. And yeah, that measurement piece becomes really important. Mm. Understanding the differences in how each of those partners are measuring and what they are actually measuring, I think is something that also needs to be recognized, because yeah, they are each defining it slightly differently and slightly measuring it differently. And there's a level of modeling that goes into it as well. So understanding that nuance, I think, is super important, but shouldn't stop us doing more work in that space to help try and reduce the impact that our campaigns are having. Because yeah, like you say, there is an outsized impact you can make from quite small changes.
Yeah, totally.
And I don't think we should, it's also an area that I don't think we should necessarily, you know, let the kind of specter of performance get in the way of that. I think, you know, more sometimes it can be a fear that making a small change might have quite a big impact from a performance perspective. Probably won't, but it'll have a big impact from a sustainability perspective. So.
Yeah, which ultimately is like a different kind of performance, right?
Yeah.
And they should be considered and then prioritized as part of those considerations that you're making. And I think maybe that's, again, where like the capabilities of machine learning and then AI off the back of that can reduce like the operational cost, as it were, for all of that measurement that needs to happen. You know, I think that's going to be a bit of a cheat code, I think, as it gets more established and it's better adopted. You know, I think that's got to be providing efficiency somewhere along the chain.
Absolutely. You touched on it before. I think the time it takes for humans to make those decisions and implement those decisions, you know, from the work we've done from an AI perspective, you see 10 times, 15, 20 times on certain campaigns, the number of opportunities for optimization kind of crop up. So there's a real speed change there. But I think the other bit from an efficiency point of view is starting to layer in those various different priorities. So, you know, there's always going to be a cost efficiency performance priority, whatever that goal might be based upon the campaign. But if you can layer in also a sustainability point of view, you can layer in a brand suitability point of view within that decision-making process and start to prioritize what impressions you're bidding on based upon that in a way that you can't really do as a single human looking at a campaign. There's going to be a significant outcome as a result of that.
It's not just you guys do a lot of agencies, like, it's not just one campaign, do you know what I mean? It's like many campaigns in many regions with different creatives, you know. And it's like that part definitely can, if you can take off some of the load there, it kind of allows you to do more of the stuff that you're really great at, you know, like determining the wisdom, as to quote Chandra, our CTO, that you can infer from large data sets that are being presented to you into a way that's much more understandable rather than the actual nuts and bolts of campaign creation, I think is quite a cool place to be. And I would even argue, like, it was, as far as like the transactions you were completing at the time, and this is even like 5-10 years ago, like, you could do a lot of stuff as one individual trader and like buy a lot of media in a way that you couldn't even have done with like booking TV campaigns or print in the past. So like, we kind of led that in, I think, and now it'd be like cool for us to, as a particular channel, to really capitalize on that and then like take that back out to the other channels that you use for your different campaigns.
Definitely programmatic print, so
yeah,
you're saying.
Programmatic print, yeah. You know what, on a Kindle, how could it be done? I'll write that one down. But I still think like print advertising is cool, you know. Like, I think the time and consideration that goes into, like, let's say an ad in GQ, for example, like, it's just a photo shoot of some clothes, right? But behind the camera is like 25 people, you know, there's like less of that in the creatives that perhaps you use online for an MPU. So yeah. It's like, it's a different kind of form of the art, as it were.
Definitely.
You know, and it's just...
And it's got its place.
Yeah, it's still cool. I think it's great. I still, we've got a GQ on the desk out there. It's just nice to just kind of like leaf through it and just like feels like nostalgic somewhat. And you look at that, it's like, it's a cool brand in GQ. Like that, that's a cool brand, Ben. You know, maybe try and buy that one, you know? It's like, that's...
Yeah.
It's great. And it's, yeah, it's one of the things about different channels for advertising. They all work in slightly different ways. It's just finding the right mix is where the art of it is, as it were.
Definitely.
All right, well, I think we've covered quite a like broad spectrum of stuff there, points. I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation, John.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for coming down. You're more than welcome back anytime. You know we are now, and we might be making some improvements to our light setup, because that is the one downside, is that you will see these lights now
in your eyes for the rest of the day.
But yeah, thank you all for listening. Like, comment, subscribe, and we'll see you on the next one. Cheers.